The whole country got to know the name of Weed, California in the late summer of 2014. That September, the Bowles Fire, set by an arsonist, blew through part of town on the ever-present wind and burned down nearly 150 homes and several other structures while damaging many more. It was shockingly fast. The rebuilding of Weed is a much longer and slower process now in its third year, but it continues to move ahead with new homes going up where charred hulks once stood. Audra Balick is the public information officer for the Weed Long-Term Recovery Group. The name alone should give you an idea of what's going on there. Audra, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. So give us a sense of what has complicated the rebuilding process in Weed. This was not going to happen overnight, obviously.
No. Rebuilding doesn't happen overnight, especially when you lose about a third of your residences to a disastrous fire. To put it in perspective, when the fire happened, our immediate response team included a national voluntary organization active in disasters, that's called VOAD, as well as the Office of Emergency Services in California. And apparently there's a formula for recovery from a disaster that's used globally. So it was estimated, based on the disaster in Weed, the fire, that it would take about 4 years for recovery to bring the community back to about where it was. We're not talking about improved beyond normal, just to come back. So we're approaching year three here, and we're doing great.
And so there were 145 homeowners who lost homes here, and I understand part of the issue was that some of them were underinsured and some even uninsured. Is that right?
Correct. Insurance issues have continued to be an ongoing problem. That's probably still a factor for about 25 to 30 families, which holds back their decisions or their ability to rebuild. And that's 25 to 30 families out of a loss of 143 homes. We have just over 60 new homes or under construction with an estimate of 3 to 5 more by this year's end.
And how soon did the first construction get to begin? I mean, I'm not even sure how long it takes to clear away the old places and get started on the new and then permits and everything else.
Well, that was very interesting. The first thing that had to happen after the fire was out was a cleanup. And because a lot of these were old mill homes, they included asbestos, et cetera. So there had to be disaster hazard waste removal. And when that process was done, it removed about the top 6 inches of topsoil throughout the burned area. And with that went all of the property survey markers.
Oh.
So if you can imagine, that could have been a cost of up to about $3,000 per property owner just to have their lot resurveyed. So one of the benefits of a lot of the donations that came in immediately after the fire, the Shasta Regional Community Foundation had set up the Bowles Fire Community Disaster Relief Fund, and it peaked at just over about $640,000. After the fire, and so a local team, the Long-Term Recovery Group, began to manage those funds and get them back into the community where they were needed. So the City of Weed was able to contract with an engineer to resurvey all 150 lots at a cost much less than it would have cost each homeowner. So that was a good benefit. If you're listening, folks out there donated to that fund, that's one of the ways it helped every family that lost a home.
That's a really interesting story on so many levels, one of which is the thing that people think, well, you need food, you need blankets, you need beds. Well, the fact is this is something that probably wouldn't enter the minds of most people donating money, but turned out to be a really good thing to have.
Right.
So let me get back to the scraping off the topsoil. So it was asbestos. I'm going to guess lead paint was in there as well. So a lot of contaminants that wouldn't normally be used in homes anymore were present in the homes that had burned.
Correct. And that was all cleared away under a very strict California state service.
And so, in the instances where people were underinsured or uninsured, I mean, let's start with the underinsured part. I mean, what's the normal course of action in that situation? And build a smaller home, or move to something else, or what? You know, what's the normal course of action?
Well, that's a good question. We did bring in some insurance experts. We had regular town hall meetings after the fire, trying to educate homeowners and property owners about the process that was ahead of them in terms of insurance. The only thing I can say is, if you own a home, you should check your insurance policy. You should look closely at what's covered, what's not covered. Underinsured people may have had some money to rebuild, and then are up to other means to try to get a loan or whatever else it was. Many people, as we said, you know, we had 60 plus have rebuilt after this fire out of 143. So, and 25 to 30 of them are still fighting with insurance companies over settlements and ways to get either a settlement or to rebuild their home.
We're talking about the rebuilding of Weed, California after the Bowles Fire of September 2014. Audra Balick is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the public information officer for the Weed Long-Term Recovery Group. And as you heard, it takes about 4 years to get a town back on its feet after a disaster like this. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation or ask some questions. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the VOAD coming in, but I imagine there must have been other federal and state agencies as well that hit the ground in Weed fairly soon after the fire.
Yes, there were. If you talk about all of the emergency response teams, you talk about state and federal offices. The Bowles Fire was about four homes short of qualifying for FEMA.
Really?
It was a real drag. But there were other sources of funds that helped in the rebuilding. For instance, community development block grants. We had USDA rural development loans and grants available. Because in addition to the residential hit, the city took a hit on their utility bill resources, losing a third of the population that was paying property taxes and school taxes. So the biggest hit came in the school systems. They're about 25% down because so many families ended up moving out of the area. Whether it's temporary or long-term, will remain to be seen. But I guess the biggest thing is the benefits of the fire for rebuilding. Like before the fire, the average vacant lot in the city of Weed was about $60,000 to $80,000. Mm-hmm. And if a lender wants to see a 4-to-1 ratio of the property to a home to secure a loan, that means $300,000 homes had to be built on those vacant lots in a depressed economic area of Northern California. So now that there are numerous vacant lots, they're running about $10,000. They now become affordable to build a $150,000 house. So the fire made possible a shift that will likely create a stronger population and school base moving forward.
Okay, I'm really curious about that FEMA number, though. If we'd gotten 150 homes, that would have qualified for some kind of FEMA disaster funding?
I don't know the exact number. I just recall, because this was a couple of years ago, I didn't research that exact number for you. But there is a threshold for FEMA to declare a national disaster. And Bowles Fire, although it was one of the largest impact for a community of its size, it did not qualify at that level.
Wow, so just missed. And you mentioned people who had moved away, and that was an obvious question. It's like, what has become of the families that lived in the homes that got burned? Nobody died in the fire, correct?
Correct.
All right. So, but the home's destroyed. Somewhere just short of 150. Where did the people go? Did some of them leave town, and have they stayed gone, as you mentioned, from the school district, for example?
Yes, most likely. We have the long-term recovery group set up a structure for helping the families that were affected by the fire. So we had case management team that interviewed all of the families affected to see what they needed, how they could help all along the way these last couple of years. And there is a fair percentage that have moved to other areas.
And given the state of the depressed economy there, I mean, is there much chance they will move back? Does anybody know?
Well, sure. The conversation that we just started about the affordable lots,
mm-hmm.
Maybe some of these families are left with a lot without a house on it.
Right.
But as the economy of the area improves, or depending on what their circumstances are away from the area, they may be able to come back and build a home. Siskiyou Habitat for Humanity has 4 homes under construction now in Weed, and that's been a great program for some of the underinsured and still working families to be able to rebuild.
How was Weed the area for the people who did stay? I mean, I just wonder where they ended up staying within the area. It doesn't seem like Weed's the kind of place that would have a lot of vacant space to move into.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
Well, what I'm asking is, where did the families who chose to stay in the area end up staying with this many homes gone in town? There obviously weren't many available for renting, I would think.
Well, there were a fair number at the time for rent. Neighboring Lake Shastina, Siskiyou County has 11 incorporated cities and a number of other outlying areas, all within, 20-minute to half-hour drive. So many, many people went and rented homes
mm-hmm.
while waiting for insurance settlements that haven't come yet, et cetera.
Audra Balik is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, public information officer with the Weed Long-Term Recovery Group. We're talking about the rebuilding of Weed now 2.5 years roughly since the Bowles Fire destroyed nearly 150 homes and a bunch of other structures. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. If somebody had really hit the ground running, had insurance, had all that stuff, I mean, you mentioned 60 homes have either been completed or under construction at this point. But with the other complications you talked about, it sounds like it was still going to take several months before there was any construction that started. I mean, do you have a figure on how soon after the fire the first actual construction began?
I don't know exactly what that was, but the building department and the City of Weed staff was very, very supportive to help people get back into homes as soon as possible. They processed their building permits and their occupancy permits as fast as they could. Everyone who rebuilt has everything good to say about the city and how they handled the planning department, et cetera.
I wonder who was available from Long-Term Recovery Group or elsewhere for just some hand-holding. I mean, most of us have never built a house, let alone tried to build a house where one once stood. And so I can just imagine there are hoops and hurdles that nobody ever imagined ahead of them.
Yes, true. Well, the Long-Term Recovery Group pretty much has 3 part-time employees. One was in charge of the case management. We have a volunteer coordinator who helps bring tasks to light and connecting volunteer groups to come in and help homeowners in their rebuilding. And we had a construction coordinator as well. Now, again, these are part-time people, but have offered a lot of assistance and guidance to those rebuilding.
And so what the paperwork process alone, I mean, you mentioned that the City of Weed has been as helpful as it can be. Were there any fees and costs that might have been waived or at least amended because of this rebuilding process?
No. As I understood it, there were no special circumstances in terms of the fees because they had to hire extra people to get the process handled quicker. One thing that did help homeowners was the county assessor in terms of property taxes. They held the assessment for the property at their 2014, the current assessment value, as long as they didn't rebuild beyond 500 more square feet of the destroyed home. So that was a tax savings to anyone who rebuilt. Their local property tax did not go up by 2 or 3 years.
Did it go down at all, though, I wonder, in the time when there was no structure on the property?
There are ways that you can approach the county assessor's office and request that, and there's a formula for that. So I imagine that some did experience a less burden on their property taxes.
Audra, I've been talking mostly about homes so far, but what's the story on the commercial structures and the library that burned in Weed and the Bowles Fire?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the library's relocated to a building across from City Hall. They have a very active volunteer group and foundation that has helped raise money to restore it. It's beautiful. It's popular. It's got computers. Kids use it. Adults use it. Libraries are important.
Just some of the obstacles I'm thinking about when you're trying to get 150 homes rebuilt. And as you pointed out, that the baseline, this is good to know, is about 4 years to get a community back on its feet after a major disaster. And this is certainly one in Weed. Issues, though, that you don't think about, like the availability of construction workers, has that been an issue in trying to get some of the homes rebuilt?
Well, we had a couple of things that I think became models of recovery for other communities. One is our local community college and high school teamed up to start a construction class, understanding that into the future there were going to be needed skills. Builders and contractors could come in, but they might not have enough labor to get the job done as quick as possible. So they actually trained young people, and some were older, could join into this class and learn some basic framing, electrical, plumbing skills. So that was one very positive program, the community construction training program that began in year two. The other thing is this steady stream of volunteers, church groups and adults and youth groups that have come from all around the country to come to Weed and help homeowners build fences, garages, pour concrete, footings, all kinds of stuff. We've had university groups. There's a university habitat collegiate challenge, for example. We just saw some students from Western Kentucky University and church youth groups through the Methodist and Presbyterian churches have been here. Some have returned for second and third year stints, because they have loved their experience in Weed. It's a beautiful place to work outside.
It is. I was just wondering if you've had any people who showed up for volunteer efforts who decided to stick around because they liked Weed so much.
Maybe so, huh?
Mm-hmm. Could be. So lots of volunteers from lots of parts of the country. Obviously, still some needs because, as we've pointed out now, about 2.5 years into what is probably a 4-year process just to get back to where Weed was. What are the greatest remaining needs, you'd say, at this point, Audra?
I think at this point, we're really kind of winding down with the case management in terms of the individual families and what they need. The biggest challenge is still this insurance company issues for 25 to 30 families. We have had, many people have had enough money to rebuild their home through their insurance settlement, bring their home back to what it was, if you will, size-wise. And again, with this whole issue of removing all the topsoil, so we started to see a whole bunch of homes and no landscaping, because did you know how expensive dirt is?
Oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that part of it.
So again, we took 6 inches of that topsoil came off. We had a very creative solution come up out of our local Rotary Club Foundation, jokingly called it the Dirt Project, but ended up with combination of donations and purchasing to be able to deliver a certain amount of dirt to every lot that had a destroyed home on it. So it was landscaping soil, and so people were able to use that to at least take care of maybe the front of their yard.
Okay, so get some landscaping done, sure. Let me take a call here. Harry in Wairika, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Audra Balik.
Thank you very much. A very timely program. The volunteer coordinator in your Audrey's organization contacted multiple colleges, and 19 so far have responded this year to be able to send students from the colleges on their spring break, on their own money, to come over and help us with the individual houses and projects that we've got going along simultaneously, like handicap ramps and things for the rest of the communities when they can't be used entirely on the other one. So right now we have Eastern Washington University has sent down 15 of their members, I believe, to be able to assist us, and each contractor has so many people working with them, and repairing and replenishing all of this stuff going on. We had Dominican College from New York last week, and another one from, I believe, Kentucky. I'm not sure about that, the week previous that.
Okay, so
this week we're not putting up with jet lag.
Okay.
But in the meantime, these kids come in not knowing what to do, somewhat hesitant to be able to go forth, and they go home trotting, if they can, to be able to finish the projects they've been assigned.
All right, Harry, thanks for the story on that. Audra Balik, thanks for joining us today to talk about where things are standing in Weed, a bit of a road ahead, but good to hear that things are moving along.